Hello, my name is Desmond Lynch. I'm 23 years old and I want to be a filmmaker. I recently made an audio short comedy drama called What Am I Inside the Riddler by Jack Ryder, and I would like to tell you about it. Development. I'm quite a big Batman fan, been so since I was a child. I find the character quite compelling, I like the stories he's featured in, and I think his villains are pretty cool as well. One of my big ambitions in life is to one day make a Batman movie, but the current moment in time, I don't have the skills or budget for that type of project. What I am capable of at the moment is very skilled sound mixing and editing, which is why I set about making this project. The story of this short is heavily based off of a short story that Neil Gaiman wrote called When Is Door Not a Door, which is in a Secret Origins comic special back in the 1980s. The short story takes place in a warehouse with all the Riddler's famous contraptions. It's about the Riddler being interviewed by a series of journalists who are struggling to make sense of his manic answers. He's very coy, very aloof. For a comic series like Secret Origins, which delves into characters' origin stories, Gaiman insisted on having Riddler be very enigmatic. He has no origin, but is rather this weirdo who likes being a mystery. The short story also acts as this interesting meta-commentary on the changing tone and content of stories in DC Comics. At this point, they were exiting the Silver and Bronze Age of DC Comics, in which stories were a bit more family-friendly and silly, less blood and violence, and we're entering this new modern age which features stories like Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns and Alan Moore's The Killing Joke. Very dark, very graphic, and very gritty, completely different from what came before, and it changed the way Batman stories and comics in general were told forever. So in this short, the Riddler's kind of acting as a meta-commentator lamenting on the changing means of storytelling within the medium. It's very interesting and is what compelled me to write up this audio short in the first place. There's a few notable changes from the original short story to this audio short. The group of journalists were all cut down into one character, Jack Ryder, who is a character from DC Comics. If you've played the Arkham games, you're no doubt familiar with him. The characterization of the Riddler is a bit different as well. He's a lot more needy and attention-seeking, combating this with his aloofness and his ego, which leads to him being very condescending. It's a very interesting dynamic in the story. Narrative is just two characters in one location. It being an audio short with no narration whatsoever, the writing needs to differ slightly from a normal short. Characters need to be a bit more descriptive about their locations, who they are, what they see, what they're doing. There was also limitations in regards to audio quality. I didn't have a budget to book a studio, so I just used my living room. It's quite a big room and there was quite a lot of reverb, which would have been a nightmare for any other project other than this. However, this story taking place in a warehouse, I could get away with the reverb. I also made it my intention from the get-go to have the entire narrative take place from the perspective of Jack Ryder's tape recorder. It gave a narrative explanation as to why the audio sounds a wee bit shitty at times, and it also explains why the story takes place in the first place. The tape recordings from the Arkham games were a big influence on the project. For those unfamiliar in the Batman Arkham games, you can go around collecting tape recordings of interviews with major villains from the game. It gives you great insight into their origins and their characters at large. They are very well made and they were a great influence on this project. In regards to influences outside of Neil Gaiman's short story, there are two main Riddler archetypes that we based our Riddler off of. The first being Wally Wingert, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, who voiced the Riddler in the Arkham games. His performance is very good in portraying Riddler's egomania, arrogance, and condescending nature. The second being John Glover, who voiced the Riddler in the 2004 cartoon series The Batman. His voice was very bassy, raspy, and older, which is one of the directions I wanted to go with. Jack Ryder was mainly based off of his portrayal in the Arkham games, alongside the performances of the news anchors from The Onion, the satirical news channel that satirizes American news media. As soon as the script was wrote up, 10 pages in total, and I believe only took one day to write, I sent it to my friend Jeremy, a voice actor I'd worked with on my podcast, A Witch in the Orchard, alongside character references for both Riddler and Jack Ryder. With that all sorted out, all we needed was a day to record. Production. We recorded in my living room over the course of two separate days. The first day, we recorded all of Jack's lines. The second day, we recorded all of Riddler's. For previous projects such as Be Afraid of the Dark, I solely used my Rode NTG2 shotgun mic to record the sound. For this project, however, we recorded it on the TKG0U Mode M799B, say that five times fast, which is a cheap USB mic you can get for under £50. It's very good quality though, so we plugged that mic into the laptop and recorded the audio directly onto Adobe Audition, the editing program that I use for my song mixing projects. I also use the Rode NTG2 as a backup, helped ensure stuff like clips or distortion in the audio was minimized, and it was good to have in case the audition audio was corrupted. For The Orchard, I found the easiest way to direct actors was going line by line. I'd number each paragraph of dialogue, make notes on how I wanted the actor to say it. Everything from tone of voice, volume of voice, and speaking pace, stuff like that. The main thing about directing is you need to be a good communicator. There's no point in having a vision if you're incapable of explaining that vision. When two people read a script, they may interpret the performance of certain lines vastly differently. One guy might read a paragraph and think the character is speaking very quick and loud. The other guy might interpret it as very slow and quiet. It's your job as the director to decide on a vision and explain that vision to the actor. Lead them to an authentic performance. A sign of a good actor is someone who's a good listener, someone you're able to communicate with effectively, basically someone who's on the same wavelength as you. With this project, I was very lucky to get Jeremy. He's very easy to communicate with, very good at following direction, and for the most part, we only had to do two takes of each line, second, of course, being for safety. We only had to do more than one for stuff I was very pedantic about and wanted it said in a certain way. Those types of lines are difficult to direct performance-wise because you want them said in a certain way, you want tone a certain way, pacing a certain way. You want a very specific type of performance, which is a little tricky to achieve. For those types of lines, you need to make peace with what you want and what is authentic. You might think you want them said in a certain way, but if the actor can't give an authentic performance, then there's no point and you just gotta move on. I made the mistake a few times directing the short and acting out how I wanted certain lines to be said. That's a bit of a tricky one direction-wise because it's considered bad etiquette among certain actors as you're kind of just showing them what to do in a manner which leads them to think, well, why don't you do it then? And they kind of resent being asked to copy your acting choice word for word, which is why you should try to avoid that to avoid diminishing professional relationships. That type of goal-driven direction is also an issue if you're looking for an authentic performance. Basically, meaning you want the actor to be portraying real or at least tonally consistent emotions and be talking in a way that is believable, which the problem with this goal-driven direction is that it most often will lead to an inauthentic performance. The actor is no longer portraying a character, but rather giving a poor impression of the director, which is the last thing you want. So in regards to certain lines, it's best you have to kill your babies to achieve authenticity in performance. The recording process, however, mostly went off without a hitch. No problems with the software or equipment. Jeremy was reading the script off my laptop while being recorded by two different microphones. We only had to stop if the loud pipes in my house went off, or when we had to go on a break, or if there's any background noise. Recording sessions like this last mostly 4 hours top. Any more and you risk damaging speaking ability, and you will be receiving diminishing returns. Jeremy is very good, very easy to direct, and certainly knows his stuff in regards to vocal control. When I asked if he could be able to laugh hysterically in a more BSE tone, he explained how that might damage his vocal cords and hurt his back as you're channeling from that part of the body, but he was happy to do it for one take, which is good. Stuff like that you don't want to push for. While you may want a certain type of performance, if it results in a person getting hurt, especially if they're unwilling to do it in the first place, then it's not worth it. You don't want to push boundaries. Work is all about trust and security, and if you can't guarantee that, then you'll get a very bad reputation very quickly. For this project, Jeremy worked for free, which for my projects, I usually try to make sure people get paid. However, for this one, I just didn't have the budget for it. Jeremy, being a friend, was happy to do the gig as a favor to me, but again, it's not something I want to make a habit. With production wrapped, I moved on to the editing process. Post-production. I edited this audio short over the course of a month. It would have been done sooner, however my schedule was quite busy as I was recording sound for a feature film throughout the entirety of July and then sound for a short film at the start of August. For the most part, the bulk of my time editing wise was spent sorting through all the sound files. We'd recorded around 21 sound files for Jack Ryder and about 25 sound files for The Riddler. All of the takes totaling up to about 3 hours of content when put together. So I had to cut it down, decide which takes were best and then edit it all down into a 10-minute short. Again, this is where the decisions on the authentic performance are important. In your head, you might see the project one way, but in the edit with what you have, this is a completely different story. Most of the lines which I had recorded with my goal-driven direction, they just didn't flow well with the edit, so we had to use the takes which had the more authentic performance. Therefore, it sounded like an actual conversation between two different people. In the final edit, I use the audio recorded on Audition and didn't use the audio at all recorded from the Rode NTG2. The Audition audio was a little clipped, at times, but thankfully for the intentions of this project, that didn't matter, as the entire narrative takes place on a tape recorder, so it's supposed to sound a little shitty, so distortion and stuff like that doesn't matter whatsoever. Once the rough cut was finished and I had the lines pieced out exactly how I wanted, I began adding sound effects, the vast majority of which I find on Vidivo.com, a good website I use to get royalty-free music, sound, and stock footage. I've used it for all my audio and video projects. I think they're very good. I recommend them. It being an audio drama, you have to be very specific about what sounds are present and what sounds are just not there. The narrative playing out on a tape recorder meant that the sound of a tape recorder had to be present throughout. It being in a warehouse meant that there needed to be a warehouse ambience, stuff like an air conditioner, random drone noise from electrics, stuff like that. Then there's the sounds of fluorescent lights, footsteps, all that stuff. I could pretty much find everything online except for the sound of a microphone rustle, the sound you get when you mishandle a microphone and get that nasty ruffling sound. I had to do some Foley for that, recorded myself picking up my Zoom H6 and fondled it for a hot second. I then added a few of those sounds into the edit to show when Jack is handling the tape recorder. In regards to the voice tracks, I made very little adjustments outside of changing the pitch for the Riddler, adding a bit more bass to his voice to make him sound older. I didn't do much of reverb, as there was already the natural reverb of the living room we recorded in. I EQ'd the dialogue twice, once to add that weird old-time radio effect you get when your audio is playing from a tape recorder. I added another EQ when the audio recorder was in Jack's pocket, making the dialogues and sound effects sound more muffled, creating a clear audible difference between when the microphone is in the pocket and when it's out of the pocket. With that muffled effect, though, I was concerned about the audibility of the dialogue. It's fine for the audio to sound realistic, but it still needs to sound clear and precise. If the listener has to rewind to pick up on what is being said, it's bad audio, and I wanted to avoid that from happening, so I adjusted levels accordingly. Dialogue quality is great for the most part, outside of a few clips, some distortion, and a few artifacts caused by the special effects and the position of the microphone. Artifacts are these weird sonic abnormalities you'd hear in sound files that have effects added to them incorrectly, such as a sound file that has a denoise filter on that is too severe, and while it might remove all the background noise and ultimately damage the quality of the dialogue and gives it its weird robot voice type effect, which is not ideal as you want a sense of sonic continuity. If there's an artifact mid dialogue, it ruins the immersion, which is why you'd want to avoid them if possible. In a normal project, those issues would be a headache for me. However, for this project, the audio is supposed to sound a bit shitty, and the artifacts are only really noticeable when the Riddler gives his "it's all change" line. And I find the artifacts added this weird, interesting, manic energy to the performance, which was cool, so I kept them in. I also had this internal debate in my mind about whether certain sound effects should be EQ'd or not. Sound effects such as the door opening, the typewriter, and stuff like that. On one hand, without the EQ, these sound effects sounded more impactful and dramatic. However, with the EQ, they sounded more realistic, like they were recorded in the warehouse with the audio recorder. I ended up making the vast majority of sound effects EQ'd, with only a special few not EQ'd. A lot of thought went into the sound design for certain things. You'll be surprised to learn that there is no such thing as a giant typewriter. I was surprised as well. So what I'd done was I added together the sound effect of a machine starting up, and then I added two separate sound effects, first being the sound of someone bouncing up and down on a trampoline, and the second being a pair of prison doors slamming shut. I layered these sound effects together to make it sound like the Riddler was bouncing up and down, spelling his name out on the giant typewriter. I think the sound effects are realistic enough to what is happening in the narrative. Initially, I thought of adding carnival music to heighten the mania, but that's more of a Joker thing, and it just didn't make sense for the Riddler. I also think that the ending with the hysterical laughter, the ranting riddle, and the now muffled sound of the typewriter sounded super manic, oppressive, and tragic. I felt it was a very cool sound, tonally speaking. All those sounds and sound effects took me about a day to edit. It took me another day to edit a video version of the project with subtitles. I had done a similar thing with Be Afraid of the Dark, and I decided to do it here for a variety of platforms, but also as a courtesy for people who would require captions or transcripts, so instead of just reading an audio drama script, they can listen and read the captions along with it. With that all sorted, I exported both separate files, made plenty of backups of everything, and uploaded them to their respective streaming sites. The final thing I sorted out was a title. I couldn't use the original short story title because outside the context of Secret Origins, it just makes no goddamn sense. The title I ended up going with is a bit clunky, but it gets the job done. It's in the style of those journalistic interview books, you know, like the quirky title and then a breakdown of what the book is actually about. For example, a book like Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. Say that five times fast. It's a long-ass title, but it gets to the point, which is what I intended for this project. Conclusion. The project took a bit longer than I had initially expected. I'd hoped to get it done by the start of July, but schedule-wise, that just wasn't possible. Sound design-wise, it's not the most challenging thing I've ever had to do. That title, of course, belongs to the river of acidic black blood I had to mix for The Witch in the Orchard. There's some writing errors I made that I could have corrected, but again, I only wrote it in one day, so what can be expected? And overall, I think the narrative and flow is pretty smooth given the circumstances. I think the plot is compelling enough, the acting is very good, sound design is pretty solid, so overall I'm happy with the project. I'd love to do more Batman-related things like this, I just don't know if I have the budget for that type of thing. I would love to do something like a radio play adaptation of The Long Halloween, I think that'd be pretty cool. But in regards to future projects, I think I'm gonna stick with my own IPs, namely Be Afraid of the Dark and more witch-related stuff. Until next time, thank you for listening, and goodbye.